Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Joe Donahue with Professor Alan Chartok. We are talking about the issues coming out of Newtown, Connecticut, and some of what is going on in our national debate and our consciousness as this tragedy unfolds. In just a few minutes, we're going to speak with Craig Whitney, a former editor for the New York Times, who has written a book called Living with Guns, A Liberal's Case for the Second Amendment, who argues that despite the sometimes extreme points of view on our country's gun policies, he believes there is room for compromise. And the question we have this morning is, do you believe that there is room for compromise? We have folks on the phone, and as I mentioned, Craig will be joining us in just a few minutes. Alan, do you think there is a middle road when it comes to this issue?
Well, I think there's going to have to be, obviously, because there's such a demand for this thing. In order to get a constitutional amendment, which I think we ought to have because of our Supreme Court and their errant ways, I think you may have to make it clear that somebody has the right of defense. But I keep thinking, what if this secretary or the principal had had a gun in this, in this school?
Right.
It's nonsense. It's absolute nonsense. They weren't going to shoot it. People aren't going to hold guns. And the big rationale is in case my house has a house invasion. But those poor kids, those poor people at Simon's Rock when Wayne Lowe went crazy and had stuff being shipped in there and all those years ago and we had our own terrible experience here. So the rationale for guns just is really lame. I don't know what the key question would be, Joe. What will that compromise look like?
Absolutely. Real quick, we're going to go to the phones, I did a quick Google search because you got me thinking about the number. But the best estimate is 300 million. That's the estimated number of guns owned legally by Americans in this country.
And that's
300
legal.
Million.
And that 300 million, and that's legally.
Legally owned in this country. Let's go to the phones and start, and then Craig Whitney will join us in just a moment. Marta is of McKipsey. Marta, good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, gentlemen. Once again, the United States death culture is what I want to talk about. Skull and crossbones is a common motif in all fashion circulars that arrive at my door for boys and men. Girls get the peace signs and butterflies in the same circulars. I see these death masks every day on motor vehicles, on people's clothing. Our media is loaded, no pun intended, with violent murder, slaughter. Our young men are voluntarily joining the military to participate in international slaughter. That is our foreign policy worldwide. You know, the Pentagon budget is more important than feeding the hungry or keeping sick people covered with health care. I could go on and on. This is madness. And as long as we indulge in it and make it like there's something glamorous about it, these incidents are going to increase. This has to be the linchpin on gun legislation and gun control.
So when you talk about legislation, and Alan, I'll ask this specifically, Marta brings up a good point that you mentioned earlier. Look, what is this going to look like? What's that compromise going to be? How do you change a culture? How do you change that?
Bit by bit by bit. Look, we still haven't gotten over slavery. The South is still, still back in the age, not all of the South, but people there who have gotten away with murder for years. It takes time. It takes an approach step by step in order to stop it. But when we have video games which extol, death and all of the other things that we see, it's time to start thinking about all of it. It means panels. It means educators. It means teachers. It means everybody in on it.
We are joined now by Craig Whitney. The issue of gun control, of course, again on the minds of Americans in the wake of the tragic shooting in Sandy Hook Elementary School in Connecticut. 28 dead, including 20 children, and some are saying it is one of the worst mass shootings in American history. But despite this tragedy and others that have occurred recently in Oregon and Colorado, there has been a lack of cooperation between gun control supporters and opponents when it comes to an open discussion of what could be done to prevent mass shootings. Former New York Times reporter Craig Whitney's new book, Living with Guns, A Liberal's Case for the Second Amendment, delves deep into the history of guns in America, their important role in establishing the United States, but also the need for an effective discussion about how to modify current laws to help prevent the tragic misuse and abuse of the Second Amendment. Craig Whitney joined us just about 2 weeks ago on this program, and it's a pleasure to welcome him back. Craig, thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thanks for having me again.
When we spoke just 2 weeks ago, you mentioned to me that you wrote this book out of a frustration of watching the reaction to mass shootings. Little did we know that one of the worst in our nation's history was still to come and occurred on Friday. How do you put that all into perspective?
Well, I would hope that this one is so horrific and so hard to understand that if there's anything that can move us off the dime where we've been for 30 or 40 years refusing to think about effective ways of making this kind of thing stop happening or happen less often, this would be it. I wrote in the book that if we did nothing, then it would just be a matter of time until the next gun massacre, and alas, it happened in Newtown on Friday.
When much of the case in your book, the subtitle of the book is A Liberal's Case for the Second Amendment, and the subtitle implies that this is somehow unusual that a liberal would make this case. But that really has to happen. This goes back to what R. Alan Chartok just said a moment ago. There has to be this compromise, right?
Yes, absolutely. We libertarians and gun rights advocates and advocates of gun control all have to stop just yelling slogans at each other and start talking with each other. They all must agree this kind of terrible tragedy as happened in Newtown just can't go on. We can't just say, well, this is the price we have to pay for having the Second Amendment give us the right to have firearms. That's unacceptable. And there's got to be a way you could find agreement on measures that might help make it less frequent that these awful things happen.
Okay, Craig, Alan here. The big question is, what would the compromise look like? What are those measures you've just referred to? Can you give us a little bit of an idea as to what you see happening?
Well, I think they have to find them, but there might be a parallel in how we deal with machine guns. You know, machine guns, that's fully automatic weapons, and the so-called assault weapons are not fully automatic weapons. You have to squeeze the trigger each time to get a round off. But we can't own, basically, certainly not easily. You can't go out and just buy a machine gun in this country, and that's been true since the early 1930s. And everybody accepts that. It is possible to own one, but you have to pay a lot of money to the Treasury Department, the ATF, to register it. You have to pass an extensive background check to be able to acquire it. And you don't read about machine guns being used in mass shootings. All these mass shootings we've had are either with pistols or semi-automatic weapons of other kinds.
Can I just stop you there real quick? And I want you to go on, but I do want to talk about the specific weapon, because we've heard a lot about this AR-15 style rifle, which is the most popular rifle in America, which was used, made by Bushmaster, was used on Friday to kill these 20 young children. And when this also was the weapon used by James Holmes, who was accused of opening fire and killing 12 people in Aurora in July. So that is a legal weapon. So where does that fall in what you're talking about?
Right. Well, it's a legal weapon, but perhaps it ought to be slightly more complicated than for other kinds of weapons to be able to go out and buy one. Now, that didn't happen. Adam Lanza didn't buy this weapon. It belonged to his mother. But, you know, Connecticut has a ban. They continued the ban on assault weapons when Congress let it lapse nationwide in 2004. Yet, apparently they grandfathered this. I presume this weapon was one that Adam's mother had before 2004, so it's registered. She owned it legally, and he used it to kill all those first graders at the school. but some kind of tighter regulation might lessen the frequency of these sorts of attacks. It shows, Newtown shows, that you can't eliminate the possibility entirely. You know, who knew he would go in, kill his mother, presumably take her weapons, and go out and use them this way. He never bought one. He wouldn't have been caught by any of the systems we have that are designed to keep guns out of the hands of people who shouldn't have them. But at least it would help if there were stricter regulation on this kind of weapon and on large, high-capacity magazines for them.
One of
There's
the
no reason,
you
no
know,
reason why a person needs a magazine of 30 or 40 bullets to for self-defense in the home, really.
Well, that's exactly the question I was going to ask. I mean, one of the points that you made the last time you were on with us is that you came into this, you're not a gun guy. And neither am I. And so I don't understand it. So I ask the question not as an indictment on anyone or on a philosophy, just out of I guess being naive and curiosity. But this AR-15, which from my understanding, and this may be an overstatement, but a generalization, but my understanding is that this is a civilian version of an M16 or an M4 used in the military. The goal being to kill a lot of people in a short period of time. What is the benefit of that being on the market available to the general public?
Well, I would say the M16 is a weapon designed to kill as many people as possible in as short as possible a time. The civilian versions of it, the semi-automatic ones, are mainly used by people for target practice and for recreational use at shooting ranges. There are, though, a number of people who've bought them for self-defense. I can't imagine that it really is very useful for self-defense in most situations you can imagine. You know, you wake up at midnight and there's a robber wielding a gun in your home, and what are you going to do? Grab your bulky M16 imitation next to your bed and shoot it. You know, people don't think about the realities of these things, and I think the idea that people can usefully use these for self-defense is way overwrought. We ought to think twice about it and think about what kinds of regulations would make it possible to keep weapons like this out of the hands of people like Adam Lanza.
Now, in the meantime, we have a United States Supreme Court, which has certainly signaled their intent to stand up on the gun for the gun guys. And I'm wondering, because we can discuss all these various weapons all we want, but in the end, if that court is sitting up there and saying nothing doing, then how do we deal with it?
Well, in 2008, in the Heller case, which struck down a ban on handguns in the District of Columbia, the ruling said that just because banning an entire class of commonly used weapons is unconstitutional doesn't mean that reasonable regulations designed to protect public safety cannot be in effect. So the Supreme Court didn't strike down all gun regulation by any means.
So then that leaves us with the question of what is reasonable. That's really what comes to our discussion, a national discussion of what is reasonable.
That's right. And the NRA would tell you no kind of gun control is reasonable. And that position, to me, is unreasonable and worse than that. It leads inevitably to tragedies like Newtown. And what we need to do is get over that and stop being cowed. Liberals should stop being cowed by the NRA's ability to play on public fears and insist that any kind of gun control is just the first step towards confiscation. And talk, you know, assure the NRA that the real aim of gun control is not confiscating everybody's weapons, it's finding ways to make all those weapons safer for all of us, gun owners as well as people who don't own guns. And we simply have to start talking with each other. It's just like the talks about the fiscal cliff. You know, you got to stop being blinded by ideology and see that you've got a simple compromise or you know, we're just doomed to these things one after another every month.
I do want to ask you, because you've done a lot of research and you have, obviously, you talked a lot in the research for your book of working with the NRA. I am curious, David Gregory, who was the host of Meet the Press on NBC, tweeted over the weekend that they made no less than 50 calls to supporters of gun rights, as well as to the NRA, and could not find one single person to defend the position on their program over the weekend. And I'm curious.
I noticed that.
Yes, and I'm curious as to how does that seem to be the standard operating procedure following events like this, or should we take note that something is happening here?
I think something is happening. I would have expected the NRA to come up with a denunciation of the expected calls for stricter gun control. And they haven't done that. I think also it was interesting to me to notice that the Wall Street Journal and the New York Post editorials right after the Newtown shooting also took a different tone than they had before. And what this indicates to me is that this is the moment to start meaningful dialogue about what can be done, because the NRA is not riding high. It clearly doesn't know where it stands at this point, what the public reaction to this shooting is going to be. Now's the time to start talking about what we can do.
We're going to take a few phone calls before you go, Craig. And
one last question,
yes.
Craig. Constitutional amendment?
Well, the only way to get rid of the Second Amendment would be to repeal it. And the chances of that happening, I think, are far less than zero.
Well, but isn't there any halfway?
No, I just don't think that's not the way to go. We've had the Second Amendment since 1791, and we're not going to turn our history around that fast.
Well, we have a Supreme Court. See, I don't agree with you, Craig, for whatever it's worth, and I say that respectfully, on the Supreme Court. I think what you say is certainly true about the Heller case, but I do think that they're always going to be with the other guys, and maybe I'm wrong about that, but it seems to me that that's where that court is going to be, and there has to be a way of putting them in their place.
Well, maybe even they will think twice about gun rights after Newtown. But don't forget, we have a constant, not very rapid, but the Supreme Court's makeup does change over time. That's one of the reasons why the NRA was fighting so hard to defeat Obama in the election, because the possibility that he could appoint liberal justices when the conservative ones retire, who might change the majority on the court.
The problem is the conservative ones are the younger ones. And the liberal ones are the ones on their way out. That's the problem.
Let's go to Paul in Albany. Paul, go ahead.
Oh, yes. Hi. Yeah, Paul in Albany. Yes. I'm glad you just brought up the Second Amendment. What I don't hear, I don't think I heard it when the Supreme Court was making that decision about the individual rights, and I haven't heard anybody talk about it up and down the line about the other half of the amendment that the NRA never quotes, which is a well-regulated militia. And what I would put to people, for anyone, is what well-regulated militia was this Adam Lanza part? Or what well-regulated militia was any of these shooters in any of these mass shootings or the smaller ones, murders? What well-regulated militia were these people part of? I think that's the thing that's been missing, and I'm amazed that this never seems to come up in any discussion, that the Second Amendment has built into it, in the phrase that everybody ignores, a seed for a structure so that people like Adam Lanza or any other individual like that could be seen and monitored. You want a gun? Fine. You're joining a militia, a well-regulated militia.
Craig, what do you think about
seen?
Craig, what do you think about that?
I would say that's a misunderstanding. As the Supreme Court said, I agree with this part of their ruling in 08, that reference to a well-regulated militia is the explanation for why the Second Amendment was written. But it doesn't create a right connected with membership in a militia. It recognizes a right that existed before the Constitution was written. And it never limited the possession of guns to membership in a militia. Though back in the colonial days, if you were 18 and white, you had to equip yourself with a gun and you had to present yourself for service in the militia if you were called upon. But the idea that you couldn't have a gun nowadays unless you were connected somehow with the militia was mistaken and basically shot down by that 2008 ruling by the Supreme Court.
We have talked a lot about that ruling, District of Columbia versus Heller, and we will be talking more about it in our 11 o'clock hour with Adam Winkler, who is a law professor at the University of California in Los Angeles and who has used that case to really as a springboard for providing an historical narrative of guns in this country. And we'll talk to Adam Winkler coming up at 11 o'clock. Let us go back to the phones and go to Mike in Saratoga Springs. Mike, go ahead.
Hey, how are you today? I hate to be calling on such a horrible subject, but I want to talk about something more practical about this whole regulation. And it starts like this. You know, if you're bartering for something you're trying to purchase and you want to pay, they're asking $100 and you want to pay $50, you don't come in saying, I want to pay $50. And that's what the Democrats have to do. They got to say a complete ban on all guns or a very severe ban and work towards the middle. Because if we start saying we want to do a little bit of this and a little bit of that, we're going to get nowhere. Because I'm, you know, personally, I have children, and it, you know, I'm sick of hearing this. And I agree with the last caller.
Mike, I'm gonna cut you off because we only have a minute left, and I want Craig to answer this. But Mike, do you start or Craig, do you start at zero?
I think the caller is right. The now is the time for the president to show leadership on this and to suggest, like he says, not start with $50, but throw out on the table some constructive ideas for how we can make things like Newtown happen less often or eliminate it entirely, and then get the other side to start engaging in a discussion about that. And now's the time to do that. I think he's showing signs of being ready to do that, but we'll see.
The name of Craig Whitney's new book is Living with Guns, A Liberal's Case for the Second Amendment. It is published by Public Affairs. Craig Whitney, thank you very much for being with us this morning. I appreciate
it. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Alan, as always, thank you very much.
Thanks, Big Joe. It's a great discussion we're having, even though it is so sad and so incomprehensible.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.